Hey, it's Benji Cole, son of Al Cole from CBS Radio, welcoming you to another edition of People of Distinction, the talk that gives an in-depth view of some of the most dynamic, intelligent, and successful people on the planet. Run to our website, peopleofdistinction.org, for more info, or you can email me directly at benji@alcoleenterprises.com. And on the line with us today, we have Marvin V. Blake. We'll be discussing his book, Why, available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Or if you guys want to get the full experience of everything Marvin has to offer, listen, do yourself a favor. Don't just stop at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, okay? Now, that's where you have to purchase the book, but go directly to his personal website, marvinblakeauthor.com. There you'll be able to find not only this, but the other books that Marvin has written. You'll be able to find more descriptions on them, as well as find more information on Marvin himself. So do yourself a favor, go directly to his website, marvinblakeauthor.com. And just so you guys are aware, Marvin was brought to People of Distinction today by some of the best movers in the business, Lunar Lights Media Publishing. If you have a book that you'd like moved, move it through Lunar Lights. You can find them at lunarlightsmedia.com. And guys, I am so excited to have Marvin here on the line, because the book that we're going to be discussing, Why, is, I mean, it's a fictional narrative, but it's a narrative that we can all relate to. I mean, A, we've learned about it in the history books. A lot of us have dealt with prejudices in our own lives, right? And what's great is the underlying message, and Marvin is going to be able to explain all the nuances, but the underlying message is really revolving around prejudices and how prejudices, guys, we're not born with them. They're man-made constructs. We learn them. We pick them up as we grow and develop on our life's journey. And this is the reason why this book is so profound, because we're all going to be able to learn things from this book and be able to reflect and possibly see ourselves and maybe some of our actions within these characters, at least to a certain extent, because of course this book takes place in a different time period. But, you know, again, the nuances that way are so relatable. And as I stated, Marvin is going to be able to explain everything much better than I ever could. So without further ado, let's bring him here on the line with us. Marvin, first and foremost, man, thank you so much for being a guest with us on People of Distinction. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks, Benji. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we are very glad to have you. Now, before we jump into the book, let's hold off slightly. Let's build that temptation just a little bit more. Marvin, tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself, please.
Okay. A little bit. Okay. I was born and raised in the mid-20th century in the then segregated city of Baltimore, Maryland. Mm-hmm. My education, first grade through ninth grade, was in the Baltimore City public school system, which at that time, the 40s and the 50s, was segregated. As a kid in grade school, I've always been interested in history. I think that I was probably influenced by what we had, a obligatory class field trips in Baltimore at that time. Those trips we would take to historical sites in Baltimore. And my favorite trip was the trip to Fort McHenry. Fort McHenry, as I'm sure everyone knows, was the fort that Francis Scott Key was viewing when he wrote the Star-Spangled Banner during the War of 1812.
Absolutely.
And during the bombardment, while Francis Scott Key was imprisoned on a British warship looking through the bars of his cell, he was inspired to write the Star-Spangled Banner. Well, I later learned, when I was actually doing research for Why and for my other book, Francis Scott Key was really not a prisoner of the British. He was not looking through a cell. He actually was an emissary of the United States government, who was on the ship at that time to bargain or to negotiate a prisoner of war exchange. But as I read and I was taught, and they told me through the tour at Fort McHenry when I was a kid, Francis was looking out the bars, and he saw the rocket's red glare and the bombs bursting in air, and he had this inspiration. He may have been watching, but believe me, he was not looking through any cell walls. Mm-hmm. So that, I'm saying that to give you a little feel as to why, no pun intended at this point, I wrote this book, because a lot of history that I was taught then in Baltimore, Maryland, Baltimore and Maryland. Baltimore, Maryland is a border state. This book, Why, is set in the mid-18th century, the pre-antebellum South, a slaveholding plantation, and it goes through 1863, which is about mid-Civil War. Mm-hmm. And what inspired me, one of the reasons that I wanted to write this book, was to entertain. Okay, but more importantly, what I wanted to do was to educate. And I think as my genre is historical fiction and heavy emphasis on both of those words, mm-hmm. historical and fiction, the history has to be precise and concise. And the fictional aspect is to write a good story using imaginary characters and at sometimes imaginary situations, but all tied into actual historical events.
Absolutely.
I now know that during the 1940s and 50s, due to the machinations of the of people like the United Daughters of the Confederacy, many of the Southern border states' history textbooks taught a sensitized, a so-called lost cause version of the history of the Civil War. And in 1957, 3 years after Brown versus the Board of Education, when I graduated from Cherry Hill Junior High, my mother, who later told me that she, at the persistent urging of my seventh grade English teacher, one of my heroes, by the way, Miss Eleanor Demme, had enrolled me at one of the city's predominantly white senior high schools. So there I was, being one of the first to integrate. While it wasn't as dramatic as Little Rock, mm-hmm. to me, it was really a tumultuous and life-rendering experience.
You know, Marvin, thank you so much for sharing. So many things to unpack there. And, you know, listen, first and foremost, you know, what I love about what you were talking about when you were, you know, hinting towards the fact that you write historical fiction with a heavy emphasis on each. And, you know, being someone myself that I've always loved to read, and especially when it comes to fictional narratives. Now, what I love so much about a lot of the fictional narratives that I have just generally gravitated towards is, it's not, you know, a fictional narrative is fantastic, and being your imagination, that's all wonderful and that's great. I'm an actor myself and a filmmaker based out in LA, so I spend a lot of time in my head and in my imagination anyway. But the stories that I've always gravitated towards were the fictional narratives that were steeped in reality or steeped in realistic circumstances, because I think it really heightens the narrative when it has some type of relatability in that way, right? And I think that that lends so much credence to you as an author for going that route. And of course, taking on a topic that is a heavy one, right? And it's definitely something that we know about, of course, to a certain extent, but as you're kind of hinting towards, in terms of different school departments have a different interpretation of history, right? And, you know, really kind of formulating that perception and you know, bringing it out, I think is great. Now, next question, let's go deeper into the book itself. I mean, we started to kind of graze the topic of what it entails, but tell our listening audience a little bit about the book, please.
Okay, Why is the story of two girls, one black, the other white, who in the mid-1800s are born 3 days apart, 15 years before the start of the Civil War, on a southern cotton plantation. During their formative years, the girls are practically inseparable, and they forge a strong, unbreakable bond. Unbeknownst to the girls, they share the same biological father, Henry Billings, the master of the Rosewood Plantation. Mm-hmm. Y follows the lives of the sisters, Rebecca. She's the white daughter of Henry, and his wife, Margaret Billings, who master and mistress of the Rosewood Cotton Plantation, and of Mandy. Mandy is the black slave girl who is the daughter of a female black slave who, as is Rebecca, is the biological daughter of Henry Billings, the master of the Rosewood Plantation. And while by Southern law, Rebecca is listed in their census, their actual historical census is listed, would be listed as Henry Billings' daughter. Mm-hmm. That same Southern law would classify Mandy as a black slave, the property of Henry Billings. Big difference between daughter and property.
Yeah, absolutely.
In defiance of Southern law that prohibits slave literacy, Rebecca teaches Mandy to read, write, and to basically become literate. And literacy, slave literacy at this point in time is illegal in the South. Mm-hmm. As you may recall, there was the Nat Turner insurrection,
yes,
which
sir.
Killed many a Southern planter, I believe in 1830, so it's really not ancient history. And that's why I know that that's one of the main reasons why the law against slave literacy was not only put on the books, but was stringently enforced. Because of the societal laws that promote and codify human bondage, slavery, despite their physical and emotional proximity, the girls are forced to maintain in public a master-slave relationship. And this is all an act because these two girls, despite the fact that at this point in time they do not know that they actually are biological sisters, they are really, really the best of friends, and that's putting it mildly. And one of the reasons they are the best of friends is because the mistress of Rebecca's mother, the mistress of the plantation, has insisted that Mandy be Rebecca, her daughter's, constant companion because there were no other white kids or black kids of that age on the plantation at the time. So Mandy was literally night and day. The only time that Mandy and Rebecca were separated was when Rebecca went to sleep and Mandy's mother then took her home. And the rules were she has to be back. Mandy has to be back before Rebecca wakes up. So these girls had a very tight bond. Mm-hmm. One of the things that that really opened Mandy's eyes, Mandy could read and write, but one of the things that really opened her eyes to the rest of the world was when the master and mistress of Rosewood Plantation decided to hire a college graduate, a professional tutor for their daughter, Rebecca, and their son, Jesse. Her name was Miss Eleanor Leary. You may or may not remember that one of my favorite people in my past was Eleanor Dimmy. And so I based this character on that. As like many of the scenarios and the people, the characters in this book are really people or characters that I can relate to because, and I write well about because these things actually happened. I put a little polish on them, but these are based on my own life's experiences.
Right where you know,
anyway,
right?
To carry on, Miss Eleanor Leary is a young progressive Irish immigrant, and she's employed to be the tutor to Rebecca and her brother Jesse. Rebecca wishes to include her black sister Mandy in their sessions, but her mother tells her specifically, no, you can't do that. That's against the law. Though she's terrified of breaking the law that prohibits teaching slaves to read and write, Rebecca convinces Miss Leary to include Mandy in their private sessions, excluding Jesse. Jesse is her brother. This opens a whole new world for Mandy, from her feelings of inferiority, racial inferiority. This education gave Mandy a burgeoning new confidence, feelings, and assumptions that inevitably came along with her existence. Her being born a black slave are replaced by feelings of racial pride and self-esteem. The girls, the eye-opening story examines the 19th century American culture, how it sculpted the current behaviors and mindset of individuals. The point of view of the oppressed and the privileged are authentically narrated, and the readers, I really think that the readers will be transported back in time. I say that because people have told me that's the way they have reacted to the book. Both of the girls are faced with a real struggle and problem when, during the Civil War, Henry Billings, the master of the plantation, loses, well, he doesn't lose. He invests heavily in the Southern cause. And because of the devaluation of the Confederate currency and Confederate bonds, et cetera, he's really wiped out financially. And he and his daughter and Mandy are advised to move, to go westward, to try to start life again. And what they and as they travel to new foreign lands, uninhabited lands, their destination is actually Lost Springs, Kansas. I don't know where I came up with that, but there is a Lost Springs, Kansas. That's not true. I do know where I came up with it. I checked it out. It's along the Santa Fe Trail, and that's the trail that they were following. But as they're moving westward, they're attacked by Indians, and they're actually attacked by Tonkawa Indians. These are Indians who had a reputation of cannibalism, and so they were attacked by those Tonkawa Indians, and they were rescued from capture by the Tonkawa Indians by Comanches. And the Comanche, they were captured. And they were slaves of the Comanche Indians. Now we're into a third culture. Remember, this is all happening during the same time period. This is mid-19th century, in the 1860s. Mm-hmm. And as captives of the Comanche, or slaves of the Comanche, the script flips in this sense. Mandy is far more suited from her early life as a slave of surviving in as a slave of the Comanche. And by the way, the term slave for Comanche, the way the Comanche treated their captives, as opposed to slave as the Southern planters treated their black slaves, is entirely different. It has similarities, but it's really different. But getting back to what I was the point I was trying to make, Rebecca was born a more or less a Southern aristocrat, and she never did a day's work in her life. And the Comanche way of life was basically based on the premise, as far as the members of the tribe are concerned, is if you don't do your work, if you don't earn your keep, we don't need you. And but Mandy is able to, and she says in the book, she flips the page. She says, Rebecca, when I was growing up a slave and I had thirst for knowledge, you taught me. She says, now it's my turn to teach you how to survive as a slave. One of the little quirks in the book is now that the Comanche one of the policies of slavery with the Comanches is that the Comanche if you prove yourself worthy, you're allowed to assimilate into the tribe. You just drop the whole label of slave and you become a Comanche. This Mandy did, okay? Mandy, the black slave girl. Mm-hmm. Her sister, Rebecca, was adamant. She did not want to be Comanche. She was adamant that they had to find a way to escape. But the little twist that comes up here is that Mandy, the black slave girl, now actually falls in love with a Comanche warrior. And the warrior agrees at Mandy's request to help bring Rebecca, her white sister, back to civilization. Now, I could go on and on and on, but you have a real good kernel now of what happens in between and the characters. There are a bunch, a plethora of characters in the slave community. I haven't mentioned Mandy's mother. She's obviously a very important character. Rebecca's mother is an important character. So is Jesse, Rebecca's brother. Mandy has a brother. His name is Jason. But all of these things are interwoven into what I think is a really exciting story, an adventure, romance, all based on historical fact.
You know, Marvin, thank you so much for that. I mean, listen, this is gripping, right? It's such a great narrative that, as we've stated already, guys, historical fiction, right? It's a fictional narrative, but it's steeped in reality. So these are going to be things that we've all at least, or should have at least, learned about and knew about. But it really, we get to take a ride on this journey alongside these characters and really share in these experiences right along with them. One more time, here on the line with Marvin V. Blake. We're discussing his book, Why, available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. But again, go directly to his personal website, marvinblakeauthor.com, to gather more information. Now, guys, listen, as we tie this up, because, you know, that's not it, right? This is not all. Marvin has actually a sequel to Why that we're going to quickly discuss in 1 second. Now, really, Marvin, the question that I want to ask you is, as we tie this book up, as we've already been able to see just with your gripping descriptions, there's so many messages that can be pulled from this book. But if we want to be as concise as humanly possible for our listening audience, what is a message, a central theme, or really what are you wanting to say to your readers through this book?
Well, the bottom line message in this book is in the title itself. As I am not a tech wizard. I know my way around Word on a computer. Mm-hmm. And I know how to count the number of sentences, and I know how to count to get a computer calculated feel for the number of paragraphs, pages, et cetera, et cetera. But for the life of me, I have not been able to find a way to count exactly how many times in this novel the word why appears. Mm-hmm. I mean why as a question, not why in general conversation, mm-hmm. but why as a question. Why did this happen? Why did he treat me this way? Why? Why that word as a question, that single word must appear at least a zillion times. I don't know how many a zillion is, but
that's a good amount. It's a good amount.
I don't know how to, and I've tried YouTube, but anyway, maybe someone will be able to figure out how you would count the number of words. But to get back to your question, what I really wanted to do was to show that the answer to that question, why do they treat me this way? Why can't I go into this swimming pool? Why can't I drink at this water fountain? I wanted to stress the fact that this is all societal, man-made rules. Mm-hmm. They usually are based on economy. You follow the money, and you can find a lot of reasons. The reason for a lot of the ills in society. But what I wanted to stress was that these prejudices against people are and races and religions are man-made. They're not natural. And as one of my favorite lyricists, Oscar Hammerstein II, wrote in the famous South Pacific, you really have to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught these things. And I want to get that across, that this is really not the way nature intended. Whatever your religious beliefs are, it is not. These silly prejudices are really societal, usually have a, if you look far enough, you'll find, if you follow the money, as Deep Throat said during the 1970s with Nixon, you'll find a reason. You will find a reason, and the reason more than likely is based on some sort of financial gain.
You know, listen, I mean, that's a message, again, that we can all relate to, right? I mean, this is something that we all experience, whether it's a prejudice or racist, it doesn't really matter, right? A lot of these things are based upon the society, right? I mean, these aren't things that we're just naturally geared and constructed to do. These are things that we start to pick up on our life's journey and start to react based upon things that we were taught, right? And I think that is such a great message, because really when you start to analyze that and you really start to put that into your perspective, you understand that a lot of these things that we've been taught can be untaught, right? And we can start to really pull these things apart and have a fresh perspective on, you know, our understanding of each other. Now, guys, as I stated, that is not all, okay? We just finished discussing Why, but he's actually written a sequel to Why. Now, the title is in Latin, so pardon me because I may butcher this, but the sequel is E Pluribus Unum, From Many, One. Now, we are running low on time here, so let's get a quick description, please, if you can, Marvin, of the sequel to Why.
E Pluribus Unum, the sequel, really takes the main carries the life of the main characters. As you will recall, Y ends in approximately 1863. Mm-hmm. E Pluribus Unum picks up those main characters' lives, most of them. No spoilers here. I won't tell you who doesn't make it, but most of them. And it carries it up until the surrender of the Comanches, when the Comanches are forced to go to the reservation, the Indian reservation at Fort Sill in the Oklahoma Territory. And E Pluribus Unum, from many one, is really, I picked that very difficult title because it is the motto of the United States. And it really, when we see it, and we see it all the time, we then recognize it. Look on your dollar bill, you'll see it. But when we see it, we don't translate it, but if you see it and you translate it, you'll realize, I hope you come to realize, that the United States is actually an amalgamation. It's a pluralistic society from many people, from the European immigrants to the Native Americans to the imprisoned slaves, Irish, Nordish. It's from all over the world. That's what our society is. And that is shown as a part of this novel, in which carries on the story that Y leaves off.
Fantastic. Guys, listen, what more can we say? Do yourself a favor, get out there and pick up both of these narratives. I understand it's a tough time that we're all facing right now, given this pandemic. We're all spending a lot more time at home than we're generally accustomed to. But why not use this time to travel? If you can't travel outside the confines of your home physically, utilize these narratives that Marvin has put together for us, and at least mentally, we'll be able to leave the confines of our home and take a journey that way. One you surely will not forget. So one more time, we're on the line here with Marvin V. Blake. We just finished discussing his book, Why, available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. But again, go directly to his website, marvinblakeauthor.com, to gather more information on this and the sequel, as well as Marvin himself. Marvin, thank you so much for being a guest with us on People of Distinction. We truly appreciated having you on.
It's been a blast, Benji. I really enjoyed it.